T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Is this the nightcap?
No, this is Patrick.
Is this the nightcap?
No, this is Patrick.
Is this the nightcap?
No, this is Patrick.
Time now for the Nightcap on WGR Sports Radio 550.
Hour number two of the Nightcap, Joe DiBiase and Kyle Powell here on WGR. Talking Bills, mostly the offense, although the defense maybe we should spend more time on because that's actually the optimistic part of the team. They've been great on defense. They've also been great in the one thing I didn't think they were going to be good at, which is getting after the passer. Jerry Hughes looks like the Jerry Hughes that we saw when Mario Williams was getting double-teamed on the other side, and he was rushing around everybody. Kyle Williams looks like Kyle Williams from 10 years ago.
It's kind of impressive holding Deshaun Watson to under 200 yards. You think back to the Minnesota victory. Kirk Cousins was coming into the fourth quarter with, what, 80 yards maybe under his belt?
Yeah.
And because it was so already over with, he threw for like 150 yards in the fourth quarter alone. Like, these are some big names that they're holding down. It's impressive. Yeah. And I can't think of a turnaround like this in season that has been so drastic. I mean, week after week we see more improvements, but holy cow, first six quarters of the year, would you have taken this?
Absolutely.
Everybody would have taken this, but oh my gosh, 70-plus points to literally stalwart of a defense.
Now, the Watson was definitely hindered. To what extent, I guess we won't really know, but it seems like we have a good idea of that now because it came out that he's not only got, I don't think it's a broken rib, maybe a bruised rib, but he's got a punctured lung, which you can play with, but it's super tough and it's super painful. So maybe they had a little bit of help on that end, but they were after him. And they're using Lorenzo Alexander as a pass rusher more, which is really nice. Latulale is interesting to an extent. I haven't heard his name called once all season, and that doesn't have to be a bad thing. It's like a defenseman in hockey. If you're not a flashy offensive defenseman in hockey, I always think of Tony Ludman for this. I never used to hear Tony Ludman's name in broadcast. That was a good thing because generally you notice defensemen on the ice in hockey when they are either making insane plays on the offensive end, but if you're not the type of defenseman, the only time I ever really notice you is when you have a colossal mess up in your own end.
You're chasing a breakaway opportunity,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I notice Nathan Beaulieu all the time. You want to know why? Because repeatedly he does things in his own end that I'm like, what are you doing? Just like common sense things that you learned in bantam or minor midget, anything. And Latulale, I haven't heard his name called once. I think he didn't have a tackle through two or three games. I'm not even sure if that's changed. I assume it is. I don't even remember what number he wears, if it's 98. But, you know, their run defense is better. They're stopping teams on the run. There's no more of those Saints games like last year where they ran 30 times in a row. That was unbelievable. I don't think Latulale is some superstar defensive tackle, but it seems like he's doing his job. I made a point on Twitter the other day that a couple people flipped out on. Just like, I was not really, it was kind of an insult, but not too much. It was just, have you noticed Star Latulale yet this season? Because I haven't. And most people haven't. But that, like I said, that does not mean he's not doing his job well. And Kyle Williams has been a monster this season. Harrison Phillips has looked decent. Like, their defense, there's reason to be optimistic all over that defense. Except that second cornerback spot, which needs to be addressed at some point. Where do you look for optimism on the offense? Like, what do you pick out and say, all right, this is why I think they could get better? If I really had to dig deep and find something to think to myself, all right, you bring in Anderson, if he looks competent, well, this other stuff seems to be going all right, maybe that could help. Zay Jones.
That's where I was thinking.
Yeah, there's some metrics on
him. Any kind of progress you can see in year two? Absolutely.
There's some metrics on him that make it seem like he's improved. His yards, his separation, yards per separation on his routes has increased, which is a good thing. It's a good sign. He makes that catch that Peterman throws him against the Texans to give them the lead. Like, that was, you know, you want your receiver to make that catch. It was no gimme. It also wasn't super difficult, but you need him to make that catch. He's got to turn out for you. He's got to turn out for you. And I don't really know what else you need to really be good on your offense. I think they're going to rebuild that thing. I don't think I need to see much from the running backs other than LeSean McCoy. Ivory, Tywan Jones, even Murphy, McCoy, these are all older running backs. Even Murphy's 27. So that's the other thing about the offense. It would be different if they were young all over the place and their struggles could be excused with, oh, it's just youth. They're learning the positions. They're guys that are in roles that they shouldn't be in, but you hope that they'll get better. They've got veterans all over the offense. You've got Charles Clay, who's been around. You've got Benjamin, who's been around. Your entire offensive line, save Deion Dawkins, is a veteran offensive line. Your entire running back corps, as I just mentioned, is veteran. You don't have one developmental guy on your roster at running back. Even your backup receivers, Andre Holmes. Curley's gone. He would have been another example of that. But Andre Holmes is a veteran guy who gets a lot of snaps. So they are going to have to start over on that side of the football. Personnel-wise, at least. And I don't know, how much confidence can you have right now? Because their band-aids on offense have not worked at all. Their ideas at receiver have not worked at all. When they traded Sammy Watkins, all right, plan A to fill in at number one wide receiver, Jordan Matthews, did not work. Plan B at number one wide receiver to fill in for Sammy Watkins, Calvin Benjamin, did not work. Plan A for number two wide receiver, second-round rookie Zay Jones, did not work. Plan A for slot receiver this season, your number two wide receiver for most of the offseason, coming in, Jeremy Curley, did not work. Last year, Andre Holmes, to be your outside guy, to be one of your top three receivers, did not work. Nothing they've done at receivers worked yet. Nothing. Has anything? One guy. Give me one guy that you've thought to yourself, hey, you've gotten more out of him than I thought you would at wide receiver. It's all been disappointments. And what's the one common thing that you can compare all those guys with? Speed. Jordan Matthews, not fast. Calvin Benjamin, not fast. Zay Jones, he's average.
Middling.
Average speed. Andre Holmes, not fast. Jeremy Curley, not fast. Nobody that can stretch the field. Nobody. Nobody that can, in one-on-one man coverage, consistently get open. No one. So
Corey Coleman probably gave you your best chance.
Yeah, he did. Corey Coleman. But I didn't mention him. Maybe I should have, but that was an idea. I don't want to criticize them for that because that was a shot in the dark that they took, and I'm glad that they took that, and I would hope that they would do something like that again, even though Coleman did not work. He was the type of receiver you needed. He was the talented type of guy you needed. He was maybe a guy that had character flaws that you needed to take a risk on. I'm glad they did that. I wish they would have kept him on the team, though. Nothing they've done has worked at receiver. Add them all to the list. Texter points out Deontay Thompson exceeded expectations. Thank you. That's a name. That is absolutely a name they brought in off the street and was way better than you thought you were going to get. They didn't sign him, though. They didn't re-sign him. And it would have been fine if they didn't re-sign him because he was a stopgap. He was a Band-Aid. But they didn't replace him. They tried to do it, and they've tried to do it, even still, with an undrafted rookie free agent. And it can be frustrating when Josh Allen drops back the pass and he throws a nice pass to a deep guy in Robert Foster. But how are you supposed to expect a guy that every team in the league passed on seven times to come in and make those catches for you. You'd hope he can, but to expect an undrafted guy to be in that role is part of the problem. It seems they don't know what they're doing with the skilled positions on offense. And part of them coming from Carolina is the worry. Because in Carolina, they weren't making playoffs, championship games, Super Bowls, one Super Bowl. They weren't making those games on their skilled positions. First of all, their running backs predated those guys. Jonathan Stewart and D'Angelo Williams have been there forever. And look at the guys they brought in. Who was the deep threat on that team? It was a guy they brought in off the street in Ted Ginn. It wasn't some guy they invested a lot in. It was Ted Ginn, who had been on like 100 teams at that point. Their number one wide receiver. He was a first-round pick. He was a very low first-round pick, though, in Kelvin Benjamin. And look at the style of receiver that was. Slow, big, physical. Second-round pick receiver they brought in to complement Kelvin Benjamin. Devin Funchess. Big, slow, physical. That's part of the worry. Because when you look at the modern offense in the NFL that is working, when you look at the Rams, the Chiefs, the Eagles, those teams are bringing in speed. The Rams are bringing in Brandon Cooks and paying a big price to get him. The Chiefs are taking a shot at a guy like Tyreek Hill. The Chiefs, by the way, had so many fast wide receivers that could outrun you that the guy they didn't need and didn't want, Albert Wilson, oh yeah, he's off and doing that every week now for the Dolphins. Albert Wilson's the guy the Chiefs didn't need because they already had too much of it. Too much small, fast wide receiver. They already had Tyreek Hill and DeAnthony Thomas. I'm in a bad spot with them on that offense. And you can't make a final judgment on it, which is why the jury's still out. But man, if they don't turn that around in the next year, the noise is going to get a lot louder. No matter how good the defense is. Because you are not going to be taking down the Patriots with just defense. We've had top defenses before here. Early 2000s, you had a great defense. Wasn't enough. The Mario Williams, Jerry Hughes defense that led the league in sacks, Jim Schwartz, that defense, wasn't enough. Sometimes offense alone can be enough. But unless your defense is historically good, you're probably not ever going to be a serious contender with just defense, especially when your offense is looking this bad. I wouldn't expect it to always look this bad, but wow, how could it get worse right now? A couple other texts that bring in a couple examples. Anquan Boldin is another failure on their part. I wouldn't give them too much grief over that. Now, if you want to talk style of receiver, sure, we can do that. He was not just slow and physical, he was old, slow, and physical. Even if he plays, what was he doing for you? A couple hundred yards, maybe a touchdown or two. I really wish they kept Coleman. There's not much you can do now. The Dez Bryant thing, nope, not happening. Anderson's going to have to be pretty good for this offense to look anything even to look as good as it was last year. Tyrod Taylor averaged just under 200 yards a game last year, 188. If Derek Anderson can come in and just be Tyrod Taylor for you, without the rushing, by the way, so it's going to be an automatic downgrade in that area. But if he can give you at least that on passing, think about how big an upgrade that is. Even though you probably thought last year it can't get worse than this, it's gotten worse. They are averaging 60 less passing yards per game than they did last year. They're averaging over 80 yards per game less through the air than they were with all of Taylor's games averaged out. 201 yards was his career average for the Bills. And they're averaging 123. So actually that's a little bit under 80. 803-0550 is the phone number. Let's go to Bill. Bill, you're on the Nightcap. What's up?
Hey, good show. I'm feeling the same way that you are, my friend.
Thank you.
They're pitifully inept at wide receiver, One of the guys that you're forgetting that is a failure and a massive failure that would have probably been a scapegoat of this game if it wasn't for how inept Peterman is Ray Ray McLeod. He's fast, but he's horrible. he loves to fumble. We had a great punt returner and kick returner, but we had to get rid of him so we could make room for this joker.
Who do we get rid of? Who are we talking about?
We had Brandon Tate, who is awesome.
Oh, yeah. Here's the thing I'll say about McLeod is I guess I wouldn't want to expect a lot from a guy who was a sixth-round pick. I think it's more the failure to me is not Ray Ray McLeod, wow, he should be better than this. The failure is you have entrusted a sixth-round rookie to play snaps on offense and be your go-to guy on punt and in the return game. I think that's probably the bigger failure.
Exactly. They're the failures, not the the receiver isn't doing good for us, but you know, their horrifically bad draft choices are just, you know.
Yeah, I mean it's tough because you don't want to put those guys should be just developmental players. Those should be guys that aren't seeing the field much or playing special teams. And actually I think McLeod, other than the last game, has been a good returner. I think he's looked good. He generally makes the first guy miss. I don't know if he has that breakaway speed that he could take it to the house all the time, but think about the way the Patriots play the return game. They use Edelman a lot. They used to use Amendola a lot. Those were not guys that were scoring touchdowns. Those were not guys that were going to outrun everybody and make it to the end zone. You know what Edelman, you know what Amendola did for the Patriots? They were just guys that were quick and were going to make the first guy miss. That's really what you should be looking for in a returner. So I think McLeod can be fine in that role. So I'm not too worried about him, but when you have to have him playing consistent, I don't even know. I have to look at snap count. I don't even know if he's playing consistently on offense. Foster is the guy that's running deep for them almost all the time, and when he's not, it's Kelvin Benjamin on a flea flicker, and he's barely making it into the picture. That position needs to get so much better. Let's go to Tom. Tom, you're on the nightcap.
Yes, good day. You know, I just wanted to, in fairness to the Bills brass. You made a point about, you know, them not addressing the receiver position, yep. Which of course is true. You know, they have issues there. But it's not like they weren't trying. You have to see it. You know, they were probably talking to agents of various free agents, but these guys are looking to hook up with a team where they have a chance to get the playoffs. And the Bills, you know, yep. Losing Tyrod Taylor and all the upheaval there, they're looking at the Bills and saying, why am I going there? And that was this year. But next year, you know, this year they're paying off the Bills $49 million in bonus money. And next year, I saw this, they're going to have $79 million in cap space.
Yeah, yes, but the problem is, Tom, there's really nobody that's worth it on the free agent market. There's not a lot of good receivers. And I know you don't want to fix your team in the free agent market, but they also did not show a commitment to address the position in the draft. It's not just about free agency. They could have picked a receiver in round 3. They didn't do it. They could have picked a receiver in round 4 or 5 or whatever their next pick was after that. Maybe it was a little bit later. But they decided we're not going to address this position until round 6. So that's part of it too. And
but go ahead. They had a lot of holes to fill, though. I mean, you know, there's only so many draft choices, and, you know, they had so many holes to fill that I grant your point, but...
Well, let me ask you this question. To me, do you see any... It depends, I think, on what kind of team you like and what kind of team you want the Bills to build. But to me, that's part of the problem. I think the way the NFL is going, I think you want your team to value a position like wide receiver, especially when you have a rookie quarterback coming in. You want them to value a position like that over, I don't know, depth defensive tackle, which is really what Harrison Phillips is at this point.
Well, I'll just say this. I think next season, with Allen having a year under his belt, and the Bills, and I'm going to tell you, I don't see the Bills. I live in Texas, in San Antonio, and I don't get to see them very often. And I'm going to tell you something. I saw that defense last week, and I mean, they were a monstrous defense.
Yep.
These guys are scary. And by the way, I'll also mention what's strange is on the Boston Globe website, on the front of their sports page, they have had continuing coverage about this Josh Allen thing, about his injury and so forth. And, you know, there's other teams in the division, and I'm not seeing anything about this. What I'm saying to you is I think those people look at the Bills, especially the way McDermott shut down the Patriots in that last game with the famous Kelvin Benjamin drop. I mean, they shut down the Patriots better than any team. Brady didn't know what he was doing. He was throwing the ball. So what I'm saying is they're legitimately worried about the Bills. I mean, I know that sounds crazy given the record of the Patriots against the Bills, but it's strange that they have that coverage. I'll only conclude my comments by saying this. I think next season, with the salary cap space, you will see more, because you do have to get a couple quality free agents. I grant you, you got to build through the draft, but I think you're going to have the Bills progressing. You're going to see a better roster, and I think they'll have some quality receivers next year. So I'll say adios and listen to what you got to say.
Tom, thank you for calling. Thank you for listening all the way down in San Antonio. Spurs are playing in 7 minutes, opening their season. I mean, it can't get worse, can it? I think the receiving core will be better next year, too. Maybe even just addition by subtraction. Maybe just Kelvin Benjamin's not here. Maybe Andre Holmes isn't here. I don't care who plays those spots. I don't think you're getting worse. What do they do with that position will be interesting. I just think it's worrisome that that's further down the list in things that you build. Because they tore it down, and then when you decide, all right, what do we need to build up? It's a little worrisome to me that that wasn't one of the top priorities, especially when you had the rookie coming in. 803-0550 is the phone number if you want to get in on the conversation. We'll hear from 1070's Joe Stasniak, who was on with Howard and Jeremy, Howard and Sal, actually, this morning. Jeremy was off. We'll play that back coming up next. Get a little update on the Indianapolis Colts. That's next. It's the Nightcap, Jody Biasi and Kyle Powell here on WGR.
And remember, Andrew Luck has gone 29 straight games now with a touchdown pass. That's the longest active streak in the league and the 11th best in the in NFL history. So he's going to find some guys to throw to, but most of these are dinks and dunks. We've not been able to get the big play because we've not had the protection for Andrew.
There he is, Joe Stasniak. Little preview of what you're about to hear. Talking about the Colts. Sorry, I got distracted. Someone just texted in. Would you trade your entire 2019 draft for A.J. Green? No. Are you kidding me? They're going to have a top five pick, maybe.
Yeah. Mr. Stasniak was discussing Andrew Luck's NFL record of 29 consecutive games with a touchdown pass.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
What's the longest streak the Bills have had in my lifetime with that? Fitz, maybe? Six? Six? That might be a good guess. That actually might be the answer. It might be high, actually. It might be high. We'll dig that up, maybe. I don't really feel like going through all the old Bills quarterbacks and their game look. Somebody tweeted or texted at us. What's the longest Bills streak for touchdown passes in a row for a quarterback? I know Peterman's is zero. How about that? All right, Joe Stasniak, talking Colts, on with Howard and Sale this morning. Here is Joe with the guys.
Let's go to the AT&T hotline. Joe Stasniak with us. The former Buffalo Bill is with 1070, the Fan in Indianapolis, and he's pretty much the guy we always tap into when we want to find out about the Colts. Joe, it's Howard and Brayton. Nice to talk to you. Thanks for coming on with us again.
Good to talk to you guys. Let's see. No return game. Okay. Anything I can give Frank Reich, I'm giving him.
Tell him there's a quarterback issue here in case he hasn't realized.
Yeah.
Speaking of backup quarterbacks, right? Let's start with Andrew Luck. There are a lot of things I want to ask you, Joe, but first off, obviously, how does Andrew Luck look? Physically, how is he doing? How has he performed coming back from the injury?
He's been better than we could have expected, I think. All the question marks, everything on this season rested on, is Andrew Luck going to be healthy enough to last through a season and play well? I don't think anybody saw this coming. He's on track of taking Matt Stafford's attempts and Drew Brees' completion record in a season. The way he's been throwing the ball, we've been averaging about 50 throws a game, something we don't want to do, but something we've not played well enough to get out ahead of people and something we kind of been forced to do. So, he's been really, really good. Some people would say a little bit of controversy came up when Jacoby Brissett was brought in for the end of the game to, throw a 70-yard Hail Mary pass, and they figure Andrew didn't have, the arm strength yet to do it. My thing was, you knew that he was going to get his rear end kicked, because we've been playing so many backup tackles in that on a Hail Mary situation. And Jacoby was under pressure. He was able to scramble out and throw it up. But other than that, and Andrew actually said after the game, no, Jacoby's got a stronger arm. There's no doubt about that. But Andrew's really, really accurate. And 98% of the time, he is super, super accurate. Hmm. And then now and again, he'll just try and force a ball. He had three interceptions last week. One was his. The other two were tip balls. So some of the interceptions aren't really on him. But he's doing everything he can, and he is just – he's playing as good as I've ever seen him.
From what I was reading, it sounds like one of the problems that has developed in terms of the offense is drops. Has that been a big issue the last few games?
Yeah, oh, yeah, big time. And that's the thing. Like I said, Andrew's putting the ball right there on the money, and these are like, you know, fundamental remedial drops that you'd see in fourth grade. So there's been a rash of that. It was a problem 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago. And we kind of just dusted it off, okay, whatever. And then the next week we had the same issue, and they said, okay, Frank addressed it and said, we're going to just work harder, more jugs machine work, guys get more, you know, go out another 15 minutes early, 15 minutes later, whatever, get practice. And guys have been keying on it, but then this game there was an issue also. So I think you may see some, well, by injury too, but you may see some changes now because, you know, third game, you know, you can't just chalk it up to luck.
If you actually, you know what, before I get to the next question on the team, you mentioned Frank Reich. Obviously, you know, there's a soft spot for him with Bills fans, and there always will be. How is he doing so far? Give me your evaluation of his first year as head coach so far.
Well, with Josh McDaniels, you know, being a coward and leaving and doing all that kind of crap that he did, we saw the other side of what a coach can be. Frank came in, and he was the perfect guy at the perfect time. And I'm telling you what, the town loves him. They don't love the record right now, but I think they're more towards the general manager on that. You know, we didn't bring any big-time free agent wide receivers here to help Andrew. We've never had a second receiver opposite of T.Y. Hilton. Hilton's been hurt a lot of the year now with his hamstring, probably not going to go again this week. Jack Doyle is trusty tight end. He's been out with a hip injury since week two. There's been a lot of problems, you know, that way, but it's more personnel-wise. We love what Frank's been able to do. We didn't have our first six offensive tackles through a lot of the year, and yet this team is third in sacks per attempt. They are protecting Andrew Luck, and you can give the guys up front some credit, and you should because they've been working hard, but they're not that great. But it's all been scheme. This ball has gotten out, and it's all thanks to Frank. So he actually had the defense, which we haven't seen in forever, the first few weeks of the season, play at a top-10 level. So, you know, Frank Reich gets a lot of credit. This staff, he inherited a couple of guys that were Josh McDaniels guys. And instead of firing them and send them packing, he said, no, we'll keep them. Let's work with them. Let's do this. And so he's just been absolutely fantastic. Everything that we could have hoped for, especially because it was the antithesis of Josh McDaniels.
Joe, I wanted to ask you about the defense. And, you know, you look at the schedule and you look at the results and, you know, they get off to a good start. Now, these last three games, a ton of points. Now, I'll throw out New England. It's Brady. But we just saw the Bills dominate Houston. They threw around Watson like a rag doll. They dominated their offensive line. Houston put up 37. Sam Darnold put up 42 and completed 80% of his passes. So in your opinion, what has been the issue with the defense of late?
That's a good question because the defense, the Sam Darnold thing is perplexing because he wasn't even complete. 55% of his passes or something. He was
55.
He missed six out of 30. That's it. He mm-hmm. only missed six out of 30 against us. Now, a lot of that had to do with scheme. I think we didn't disguise our zone versus our man very well. We had a lot of outside coverage, outside responsibility with our corners. Our linebacker would bite on a handoff, and obviously they went for 323 the week before, so you're going to be keyed into the run, but that took the linebacker out of the middle, and all the guys did were slants the whole game, and they just completing them at a high percentage. It's an easy throw for the quarterback. So a lot of that has to do with scheme. Again, we're a little beat up. You're right, the Brady situation, we just couldn't get any pressure whatsoever. We were on record-setting pace for tackles for loss. We were number two in the league in sacks after 5 weeks. Just unbelievable what they were able to do, and then they just nothing for Brady. No pressure, no nothing. And so Marcus Hunt might have a lot to do with that, which is a hilarious thing to think. The Estonian giant, a guy 6'8", second-round draft pick of Cincinnati, but basically all he was a special teams kind of a freak. You know, he can get up, he can block passes. If he rushes at the defensive end, he can get his hands up and block passes. But he was sacking. I mean, he was getting sacked. He was top three in the league at the beginning of the year sacking, but he's had an injury. It's the problem with most teams this time of year. When you're starting to, you know, not show what you did earlier, it's because of injury, and we've just kind of lost some guys there.
Yeah, I was going to say, is there a youth issue in there too, Joe? I knew about the injuries, but they're playing some younger guys on D, aren't they?
Oh, my gosh. Darius Leonard is the most exciting thing to happen to Indianapolis since Peyton Manning was here. Maybe since Victor Oladipo. Let's make it closer to in the
okay.
basketball season starting today. But,
yep.
No, this kid is unbelievable, the middle linebacker. I mean, he missed a game, and he's still leading the league in tackles. So, our linebacking core is all young.
Mm-hmm.
Our defensive backs are young and unproven. Malik Hooker, was a steal at 15 in the draft, but he only made it through a handful of games last year before he was done for the season. So he's back this year, just not playing at a high level yet, probably working through an injury. Now, we've got a massive amount. I mean, three of our four running backs are young, 1 year or less. You know, two rookie running backs that we've got. So, no, this is an extremely young team, and that's really the way that Chris Ballard wanted to go. You know, he didn't want to spend. We got a ton of money to spend, just like you guys do, but we didn't want to waste it. You know, we saw some of the contracts that were going out there for guys right off the bat, and it was just ridiculous. You just turn away. And it may have come to bite us a little bit now, but if these guys can prove anything, they're going to get a lot of playing time. You know, we think we found two starting guys. We, of course, the sixth overall pick and Quentin Nelson, the left guard. This guy's going to be our left guard for a long, long time. Braden Smith was a second-round choice that we got in trading in that Sam Darnold trade to move back to six from three. He ended up, we thought he'd be our starting right guard. He's our starting right tackle right now and playing pretty well. So some of the guys we have, they're actually playing pretty well and maybe a little bit better than expected, but it's all down-the-road stuff. So I guess you could say a little bit. But, you know, you lose to Cincinnati because Jack Doyle fumbles. You know, Adam Vinatieri misses a kick here that kind of puts you off. Andrew throws an interception. I can't pin it all on the young guys. It's some of our older guys that have not come through either.
Joe, final thing. You know, you mentioned Hilton and Doyle. If those guys are both out, who are the main targets in the passing game? That's part one and maybe part two. Is there a running game that they might lean? I know you've been saying, like, Luck is throwing a ton of times. Is there a running game they could lean on more maybe in this game?
Well, we're hoping to get that back. Marlon Mack was back just his second game. He was going to be our starter when the season began. He had a hamstring issue, and he only played one game until last week. Last week he comes out, has 89 yards, I think, on a dozen carries. So about 7.5 a carry. That's unheard of for a team that, without our quarterback scrambles, Andrew Luck had the longest run, maybe still does, at 33 yards, and that was a scramble. So with Marlon Mack coming back, we think that's going to help us a little bit. We've got Anthony Costanzo at the left tackle, who's back. So between him and Nelson, we actually have a way to run the football a little bit. Everything is quick pass, and probably our big play guy now is Eric Ebron, who we brought in from Detroit. Drops the ball time or two on some easy catches, but he'll make some too. And remember, Andrew Luck has gone 29 straight games now with a touchdown pass. That's the longest active streak in the league and 11th best in the in NFL history. So he's going to find some guys to throw to, but most of these are dinks and dunks. We've not been able to get the big play because we've not had the protection for Andrew.
Here's a stat you can throw at your audience today, Joe. You ready? Because if Andrew Luck and all of the Bills have the longest active streak of not allowing a 300-yard passer. 15 games.
All righty, then.
So we'll see what Luck does. We'll see.
That'll be our over and under on Friday when we bring that up. That's a great stat.
There you go. That's in lieu of paying you for coming on our show.
Hey, we're going to have fun this weekend. Billy Brooks, John Kidd, Chris Moore, Will Wolford, a bunch of the former Bills are coming in to support Frank this week.
Oh, cool.
So it'll be cool. Jimmy Kelly's coming too, so it'll be a really neat reunion here this weekend.
Terrific. Enjoy it. And again, as always, thank you very much. You're always kind with your time. We appreciate you coming on with us.
Anytime. Love you guys in Buffalo.
Joe Stasniak with the morning show earlier today, talking Colts. They're an interesting team. I thought they were a dark horse to win that division. That looks idiotic right now. They are 1-5, but they've had four fourth quarter leads, I think, in six games. It's the same story from last year, though.
I believe Bowen said three out of their five losses.
I don't know if they were leading in their win. I don't know.
Right.
Last year, though, they lost like eight games after having a fourth quarter lead. That division's weird, though. Maybe they're still in it. They're only two games out of that lead for the division. Titans and Jags are both 3-3. Yep. And the Texans are 3-3. So they're two games back of all three of those teams. Win your division games, Colts, and maybe you could still do it. I got my bet with Shoup. Tennessee Titans finishing third or fourth in the AFC South. Texans are my big hope. Colts, maybe dark horse to come back. And I need the Jags to pick it up. Can't be getting blown out by the Cowboys 40-7 if I'm going to win this bet. We'll talk a little hockey. Last call. Victor Olofsson is on fire for the Rochester Americans. Couple comparisons to Olofsson that have come out on Twitter. A little interaction between me and some fans in the past few minutes. There is a good comparison, and there's a bad comparison. Both guys that put up AHL production, both guys that were late-round Sabre picks. One became a good player, one didn't. I'll tell you who those names are after the break. We'll talk a little hockey. Last call in the Nightcap, 803-0550 is the phone number. Right after this, it's the Nightcap, Jody Biasi and Kyle Powell on WGR.
His release is so good, you don't know when he's going to shoot it. That's the biggest thing right there. But when it comes off a stick, it's really hard and accurate. And yeah, he's just got a great release. You can't. It's hard to teach that. You know, if we put everything else together with him, he's a great asset for the organization. And I don't know if he's got the best one around or whatever, but I know that he does get him off and he does get him through. And that's the hardest thing right there. It just doesn't matter what type of shot you have. Can you get it through and are you accurate?
Rochester Americans head coach Chris Taylor on with Howard and Jeremy this morning. Howard and Sal, keep saying that. Victor Olofsson already on fire tonight. Two goals and two assists as the Amherst lead 5-1. And he has got a hell of a shot. They're beating Utica 5-1 after two periods. The two comparisons to Victor Olofsson. Former Sabres. One, the bad. Start with the bad. Former seventh-round pick. Also, just like Olofsson. Also like Olofsson, had a great shot. But he didn't have much else to his game. Mark Mancari. You hope he's better than Mark Mancari. Because Mancari was down in Rochester. There was buzz. There was buzz. Like, this guy was down there leading the AHL and scoring at times. A superstar in the AHL, if that exists. But it never translated to the NHL. That's the bad comparison. Hoping that it never comes to that. The good comparison that somebody mentioned on Twitter is Aleš Kotalík, who was a sixth-round pick of the Sabres, also had a hell of a shot and maybe not much else to his game, and he churned out a pretty long career, especially with the Sabres, nearing the top of the Sabres in scoring for a lot of years, top six player, top six forward on two conference teams, conference finals teams. And Olofsson could be even better than that, I think. What was it? Kotalík, low 20 goal scorer. He'd get you 60 points on a good year. But we'll see. He's got to do it in the NHL. I'm sick of all these guys in the AHL just hoping Justin Bailey's and Nick Baptiste's and all these guys that produce at lower levels of hockey and then it doesn't translate to the NHL. Johan Larson's another name. We'll see. I stay optimistic, but I need to see him do it in the NHL before I'm ready to count on that as anything. Because I've been spurned. We've been spurned over and over and over and over with these prospects that were supposed to be all hitting us at once. We were supposed to have one of the great prospect pools in the league, and all these guys were going to show up, and they were going to play their roles in the team, and we were going to have this really good young team that all came together at once. And it didn't happen. So we'll see. You got to hit on some of those picks, and maybe Olofsson is one. Because the one thing the Sabres have not done is get productive players past the first round of their drafts. And you've got at least two guys down in the AHL right now, Brendan Gooley, second-round pick, Olofsson, seventh-round pick, that you would hope can come in and do something similar to that. Sabres did not look good last night against Vegas. They were outplayed from beginning to end. I don't know. I can't. Last year, it felt like we knew, right? Like a couple weeks into the season, I feel like we knew this team is not going to be good. We were hoping it would turn around, but we knew deep down it was not going to be good. I don't really know with this team yet. They're playing about 500 hockey. Actually, I think they're playing 500 hockey. 82-point pace. I can't really decide yet if I think they're going to be better or worse than that. They've been inconsistent, but they've been dynamic at times, which they've not shown in the past. Even when they've won in the past few years, it was like, okay, Eichel just had a great goal. They grinded it out. They didn't play super aggressive. Like this year, when they're winning, I don't think they look dynamic at times as a team. That's one thing that gives me a little bit of hope.
You could also argue on the back end that the goaltending has gotten them all three of their wins.
That's true.
At the same point. That you would have a nice tandem.
That would worry me more than it would really. You know what I mean? Because I don't.
Yes.
That could happen. It could happen where Carter Hutton and Linus Ullmark play so good that they just carry you to the playoffs. That happened a couple years ago with Colorado. Not when they made it last year, but I think 3 years ago when they made the playoffs. Varlamov had a Vezina candidate season. He was a Vezina candidate that year. The team was okay in front of him, but not great. That can happen. Some goalies just have a year or two where they're insanely good, and maybe that'll happen here. But even if you don't get that, I think maybe this team could be good. Because the depth is there. You got to get a little bit more, I think, out of these young guys, though, if you're really going to make that jump this season. Otherwise, I think we might have to wait another year before they really start talking about playoffs. If we want to talk about it this year, I think you're going to need a little more out of Mittelstadt. You're going to need a little bit. Tage Thompson, you're going to need more out of. Casey Nelson.
That's what I wanted to ask of you, though. Is the easy fix, the simple swap, Tage Thompson for some seasoning for Victor Olofsson if this hot start to the season continues?
You could try it. I wouldn't be too optimistic about it, though.
No?
I don't know. Maybe. I mean, maybe he would come in and light the world on fire, but sometimes it takes guys years. Goals don't always translate. Mark Mancari was the example I mentioned a couple minutes ago. That was a guy who scored loads of goals in the AHL, and it did not translate to the NHL. But there is another example, like a guy like Mike Hoffman, who scored loads of goals in the AHL for years and finally got called up, and it did translate. So maybe it's a thing they could try. The only thing that worries me about that is I think Thompson's more of a two-way player. He can penalty kill. He's big. He's physical. Olofsson, if he's not scoring for you, I don't think he's doing anything for you. All right, that's it for us. We'll be back tomorrow for an elongated version of the Nightcap because the Sabres are at the Sharks at 10:30, and we'll lead you up to the coverage of Sabres and Sharks. Until then, everybody have a good night, and we'll see you tomorrow. It's the Nightcap, Jody Biasi and Kyle Powell, Pit Reporters up next on WGR.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.